the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trashview and Nada Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit, thinking the sin flood of subliminal statism out of your head. Is it working? Can you feel it, John?
Oh, I can feel it.
As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back. We're the Freedom Fiends. I'm Shane, and I'm here with John.
Hello, everybody.
So how have you been, John?
I've been doing all right, considering, you know, fighting cancer and dealing with poison and doctors and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine. Thankfully, my concern's a little bit more day-to-day, average type things. You know, getting enough sleep, you know, things like that, paying the bills. So I guess when it comes to certain things, I should be, you know, thankful.
Well, that stuff ain't easy either.
Yeah, it's not always easy, that's true, but we're glad to have you here. And when Michael first told me I was going to be doing a show with John Vibes, I was actually excited. Because I was aware of you guys and the Conscious Resistance Network and all that kind of stuff. And so I've been following your stuff for, I don't know, about a year or so now.
And well, that's awesome to hear, man.
I was familiar with the book. I'm actually still reading it right now, but I'm in the process of doing so. And I have read The New Libertarian Manifesto by Samuel Edward Konkin III. And I've been a fan of agorism, and I know that it's heavily based on that. And so, like, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to learning a lot more about it.
Yeah, I mean, we were very inspired by Konkin's work and agorism because it gives a solution. That, you know, in activism, there are just so many problems presented and there's rarely any solutions presented. And agorism is just all about solutions and all about finding a way out of this, you know, slavery that we're trapped in.
Yeah. One of the things I was really excited about is how, you know, I guess Konkin, he said that he wanted to teach counter-economics to libertarians and teach libertarianism to the counter-economists. And, I kind of do adapt that same kind of strategy, not just necessarily with those two camps, but when it comes to philosophy, psychology, and spirituality, I think they all kind of go hand in hand, you know, so that we can be free in body, mind, and spirit. And I like how he particularly focuses on the libertarians and the counter-economists, because he says those are the two keys that need to work together to not necessarily abolish the state, but to make it obsolete.
Yeah, and it's interesting because those are two groups that have separate pieces of the puzzle, and they don't employ the other side. So to make sense of that, the counter-economists, they are involved in the action that we need to be taking, but they don't have the grounding in the philosophy, and they don't know why they're taking that action. So, for example, you have a drug dealer who's just trying to make money, but doesn't understand that he's actually undermining the system in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to be an economist for quite a long time, but I didn't have that philosophical consistency.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, on the other end, you have libertarians, you know, who will read books and go to conferences all day and talk about liberty, but they're not putting any action in. So if we can combine, both of these pieces of the puzzle, then we can kind of have a complete strategy.
Right. Yeah.
And to explain to some of the people who are listening who, you know, might be new to the concept of agorism, it's basically the idea of using counter-economics, which is any type of economic activity that doesn't involve the state, to undermine the state, to bleed it of its taxation, which feeds it, and just to overall create alternative systems and ways of doing business that are not underneath, the realm of government. And this is kind of creating a lifeboat to take us to another society that we also create, if that made any sense at all.
Oh, absolutely. See, when you say lifeboat, I think safety net, because we know that there's probably going to be some sort of collapse, whether economic or governmental of sorts. And these services, these, you know, free market solutions, once they're in place, they can act as the safety net alternative for when government, you know, becomes obsolete and collapses in on itself. A lot of services will be interrupted, but there will be free market alternatives. And if these things are introduced little by little now, before any sort of collapse, there may not need to be any sort of dramatic collapse necessary at all. It can be almost a seamless transition from monopoly to free market.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people might think that this sounds whimsical and crazy, but there are actually real life examples that we could look at that have already taken place, you know, over the past few years. And I always like to use the alternative media as an example. You know, 20 years ago, it was CNN, Fox, and NBC, and that was all that anybody, you know, knew of media. And that was, essentially, it was a branch of the government, you know, even though it was not, a, you know, technically a part of the government. So now we have, through acting on our own, creating alternative systems that are not under the purview of government, we have created a whole sprawling alternative media, you know, system, which has so many different viewpoints represented and has so many different people contributing that the old media is not even needed anymore. It's obsolete. And if it went away tomorrow, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even notice. And those that did would quickly have somewhere else to go to.
Right. I certainly wouldn't notice very much, except for maybe there would be a lot more, you know, people from the mainstream coming over to check out the alternative, you know, news, and we'd be getting a lot more traffic on those kind of sites. But the only thing I would really notice would probably be the lack of fake news, which is really all the corporate media tends to be these days, is a fake news and PR mouthpiece for the government. So I don't think I would miss that very much, and it would probably be a breath of fresh air if it were to just disappear one day.
Yeah, and it actually might, you know. I mean, that is kind of the whole philosophy of agorism, is the fact that you don't necessarily have to storm the gates of the palace and burn it down. You know, you just create the alternative system, so you know, whoever is in the palace no longer has all of the servants at their disposal, because now the servants are working for themselves at their own businesses.
Yeah, I've often said that instead of trying to smash the state or change it from the inside, we can just go around it by using the free market, you know, to avoid government instead of going through it. And we can just go around it instead of through it. So, yeah, I mean, instead of smashing the government, smashing the state or changing it from the inside, just use the free market to go around it.
Yeah, I think I saw a meme floating around somewhere that said that we want to do to the government what Netflix did to Blockbuster or something.
Oh, yes.
You know, to
that's
that effect.
Great. I have seen that one too. And it's something, it was something like a question was posed to agorists. Is that when agorists are asked, you know, how will you abolish government? The answer is the same way we abolished Netflix. You know, the free market just came along and provided an alternative. And so that's what everyone uses now.
Exactly. And in this age with, you know, our generation or the multiple generations that are living now, this place and time, we have more opportunities than ever to create alternative systems and to just, you know, build our own lifestyles, our own societies, and not necessarily just fall in line with what we were born into.
Right. And a lot of these services, I say in quotes, that the government has a monopoly on can actually be provided by the free market more efficiently and more effectively with more accountability than is done through government. And another example that comes to mind is cell 411 as sort of a replacement for calling the cops. It's a really nice app that you can use. I have to use it more in depth. I have to get more people on my cell 411 because I don't have very many people to call in an emergency. But then there's also things like what's going on in Detroit. Detroit has Viper Threat Management, which is a private security firm that kind of takes the place of the police. And they tend to only come when you call them instead of patrolling looking for problems. Because, you know, in a free market, these kind of things, these services are going to be completely voluntary, and they only show up when you call them. And so, you know, the firefighters, they don't patrol looking for fires, so why do the cops have to patrol looking for a problem? So
yeah,
in a free
you
market,
don't see the ambulances on the street either.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they only show up when you call them. They don't go around, you know, looking to start trouble or enforce policy or generate revenue. You know, they're only there for, you know, to de-escalate situations where, you know, potentially violent situations or situations where there's been a, you know, violation of life or liberty or property, such as theft or, you know, violence of any kind.
Yeah, Cell 411 is interesting. I haven't downloaded it yet because I kind of like live in the middle of nowhere and I'm not even sure if it would be useful for me. But what is the functionality of the app? I've heard a lot about it.
Well, Cell 411, it works by GPS so that you can set it up like distance-wise for people to like when you set the alerts, you can set up like create different cells, and so you can have like a local cell. You can probably even have like a non-local cell to alert your friends, but most likely they wouldn't be able to respond without being within a certain geographical distance, at least not respond in a timely manner.
Interesting.
But yeah, you basically create this network of predetermined individuals that will respond in an emergency, and you can, you know, it's a kind of user-friendly app. You can, you know, alert them to certain types of emergencies so that they have a pretty good idea of what's going on. And Cell 411, I think, also now has, like, you can video the cops, and it has a way of, like, saving the video live, like, as you record it, and then it doesn't allow them to delete it. I think it even has, like, a fake delete button that makes them think they delete it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, cause that's what I was going to ask about, because I heard that part of it, the getting away from the cops part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so you always want to film the cops, and if you have Cell 411, that option is built in, and it's better than just trying to, you know, film them with your normal phone. And we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
And we're back. It's the Freedom Fiends. I'm here with John. I'm Shane.
Hello,
we're
everybody.
We're just yakking about various things. We had covered a little bit about Konkin and about your new book, The Manifesto, and
counter-economics.
Yep, agorism and counter-economics. And one thing that does go hand-in-hand with counter-economics is cryptocurrency. And there is actually coming up on Monday, August 1st, a fork in the Bitcoin chain.
What is this thing, man?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out, too. I know that we have a couple of friends among us that are more knowledgeable than we on the cryptocurrency stuff. You know, Michael, our host of this show, who we hope was going to be here tonight, he's very knowledgeable on cryptocurrency. And even has his own cryptocurrency that he's created. And another friend of mine, Sterling Lujan, he is also very knowledgeable and writes for Bitcoin.com. He recently wrote this article for Bitcoin.com called Hard Forking for Dummies, two simple rules to access your Bitcoin Cash. And he says there are two cardinal rules Bitcoin holders should follow to prepare for the Bitcoin hard fork. These rules will help users protect their Bitcoin and gain access to Bitcoin Cash after the fork resolves. So Bitcoin has had Bitcoin.com has had a lot of people inquire about how to protect their Bitcoin and gain access to Bitcoin Cash with the popular wallets Bread Wallet and Blockchain.info specifically, which will be addressed at the end of the article. But anyway, the hard fork is happening Monday. Bitcoin Cash is being created by the fork. It is a new and different token or coin than Bitcoin Legacy, the current Bitcoin network. Don't panic, though. Your coins will not just evaporate into thin air. You will have options on how to handle the consequences of the fork no matter what happens. Here are the two cardinal rules. And rule one, he goes on to explain, is protect your private keys. The most important thing to remember, do not keep your coins on a custodial wallet. This will ensure that you have access to your Bitcoin after the fork. Make sure your coins are in a wallet where you keep the private keys. Keys are not the same thing as a password. You can use a password to log into a service like an online wallet, but keys refer to the actual code used to control your funds, your coins, on the Bitcoin blockchain. As long as you have the key, you can always use that key in almost any Bitcoin-compatible wallet to access your funds. To keep your private key private, all you need to do is use a wallet where you create a seed code or generate a password that protects your private keys. Many wallet applications provide information on whether or not they are custodial or not. So he goes on to explain, you know, various ways to go about this, although most Bitcoin users out there, I'm sure, have already done something similar to this, have backed up their keys, and they have their words written down on a piece of paper, locked away in a safe. So hopefully, if you guys haven't done that, then you do now or soon before Monday's fork. Now he says, rule two, do not transfer Bitcoin during or immediately following the fork. The second rule, users should not do any Bitcoin transactions, send or receive coins during or directly following the fork. All users should wait until 2 or 3 days after the fork before sending funds, maybe longer depending on network stability. This is important because the network may be unstable and vulnerable to attacks during this period. However, any vulnerabilities cannot be easily exploited if users are not sending funds around. If you follow the two rules cited above, you should be well protected both during and after the fork, as well as be able to access Bitcoin Cash. He says, stay tuned to Bitcoin.com for more information regarding the fork as the situation develops. And then he goes on to tell you how to obtain your Bitcoin Cash on Bread Wallet and Blockchain.info. And we have about a minute and a half here, and he goes on to explain the different ways to retrieve your Bitcoin Cash. But I guess basically in a nutshell, this new sidechain that's being created, he's calling Bitcoin Cash, and it will be duplicated in the same, however amount of Bitcoin you have, will be duplicated with that same amount of Bitcoin Cash. However, you're going to need to use the keys to unlock the wallet to retrieve your Bitcoin Cash. So you can use legacy Bitcoins, just as we always have, but you're going to need your keys to unlock your wallet to access your Bitcoin Cash, the new Bitcoin that's created. And I have no idea how popular this sidechain, I guess, is going to be, but, your previous Bitcoins that you've already mined, you're in no danger of losing. So there's no reason to panic over that, especially those people who've already taken the necessary precautions and backed up your keywords.
Yeah, this is just really, a lot to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. Yep, there's a lot of stuff going on in the cryptocurrency world, and I wish I was as much of a computer nerd as Michael W. Dean, the creator of Bitcoin. All right, and we'll be back after another trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio worms.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
We're back.
Creator of Bitcoin.
What did I do? What did I do now? Don't blame me for that. There are other people involved.
Would you break?
What did I break? What were you wrong about?
Well, I said
Coke,
you were the co-creator.
Undiluted co-conspiracy.
The co-creator of Bitcoin.
unindicted co-conspirator.
On Fiend Phone.
Yeah. Yeah, to talk about all this stuff. I was sleeping and I heard you guys in my sleep, I think, talking about Bitcoin Cash. And I'm like, man, I'm going to make my triumphant return, even though I'm sick, to talk about this. I made a joke the other day. People are going to think you're dire, but John and I were talking about this and he thought it was funny. I've been so sick with pneumonia that I haven't been able to come on the show for 2 weeks when the guy with cancer has been able to come on the show who's getting cancer treatment. That's sick, man.
I know, right?
That is sick. I know. But I'm getting better. And yeah, I have viral pneumonia, man. It's horrible. Oh, I got it from our ex-handyman who is no longer a handyman for other reasons, but that's the gift that keeps on giving.
Viral pneumonia. Yeah. I think my fireball is good for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't lick him or anything. It's just, you know, he was in the house and talking to me and sneezed on a glass and I put it away or something. But, ugh. Yeah. It's been tough. I've been sweaty. Been a sweaty dude. You guys ever be a sweaty dude?
Yes. Almost every day.
All the time.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk about Bitcoin Cash. What did you guys say about it? I just caught that you talked about it. How long did you talk about it?
Confused.
Well, I mentioned it.
That's why.
Yeah. Well, okay. So is this a hard or a soft fork, for one? And Bitcoin Cash is different from legacy Bitcoin, and you have to re-access it after it goes live or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did you guys talk about the reason it exists?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. No, not exactly. No, I didn't.
All right. Yeah, it's not just, hey, you know, let's make another thing. It's to solve a problem. Now, I'm going to say allegedly, because I'm not sure that this is completely accurate, but you know, you guys know who Roger Ver is?
Yeah.
Okay, Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus. He doesn't like that name, but people call him that. That's he's a guy who got into Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live turned him on to Bitcoin like a year or two, I don't know, when Bitcoin was pretty much worthless. And Roger owned a company called Memory Dealers in Silicon Valley that was a mail order and like physical memory and used computer shop. And he had like, you know, a couple hundred used computers. And he just set them all up mining Bitcoin back when you could do that with home computers and didn't need like banks of, you know, specifically designed hardware to mine Bitcoin. And he mined a crap load of it and kept it. And he has like $100 million worth of Bitcoin now.
Wow.
And, you know, so people pay attention to what he says. He's very invested in Bitcoin. He's been an evangelist for Bitcoin. I would conceivably say it's possible if it weren't for him, we probably wouldn't have heard of Bitcoin. That may be an exaggeration, but I think there's like, you know, him and six or seven other people, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have heard of Bitcoin. And it wouldn't be worth much. But, you know, he's been pushing, like to the point of like traveling the world, walking up to strangers, pulling out his phone, saying, let me help you set up a Bitcoin wallet. There's this thing called Bitcoin, and then sending them a few Bitcoin, you know, like Bitcoin, it's now worth thousands of dollars back when it was worth pennies. You know, his thing was always like he'd send someone a dollar worth of Bitcoin, whatever a dollar was at the time. And a dollar back then is, you know, a lot now. So he's been pushing for changes in the Bitcoin protocol for years because Bitcoin has kind of been broken because it didn't really scale the way that it should have because it got way too popular way too quick. So the block size was never changed. And basically Satoshi Nakamoto, who created it, and we're going to get dunning emails from people who say, you said everything wrong in this. Whenever I talk about Bitcoin a lot, there's so many opinions that there's a civil war, and the creation of this new coin is the result of this civil war. And there's people who want to kill people over it. They're so upset about it. I mean, people are livid that he's doing this. It's kind of weird because like he's been trying to get Bitcoin to change, and people are basically like, go away and start your own coin. And now that he is, they're like, you're going to devalue Bitcoin. We want to kill you kind of threats. You know, I think it's just it's mainly Roger Ver and a guy who owns a large mining concern, I think, in China. Bitcoin is kind of centralized in a way. It's kind of weird because people think, oh, it's entirely decentralized. It's kind of not, because some other miners, not the miner who's doing this, but some other miners have been resistant to adopting these changes. Now, the way it's centralized is basically like over a certain, a majority or even a supermajority of the mining power has to switch to new software to implement change. Like, they're going to be doing something tomorrow night at midnight, August 31st, UTC time, that will July basically... 31st. July 31st, sorry, yeah, August 1st, the rollover, the midnight over in the international dateline when it starts. They're going to, the Bitcoin miners have conceded, okay, we're going to raise the block size from one megabyte to 2 megabytes. Roger and people like me on the other side of the Civil War contend that that's not nearly enough, and it's still going to take a long time for transactions to go through, and it's not going to scale well as it gets more and more popular. I mean, it's getting more popular to the point where, like, Inc. magazine and Fortune 500 magazine, I'm seeing articles in them now called What Bitcoin Is and How You Can Buy It, like for the regular Joe. Like, it's finally reaching mom and pop. Like, people are calling their investor and saying, I don't want stocks. I want 1% of my stock money converted to Bitcoin and things like that. So,
yeah.
And there's a so the change that Roger's side is making, they're making a new coin. So it's basically they're making an altcoin that's not starting from zero or scratch like most altcoins do, that don't start from block one. It's starting from whatever block Bitcoin's at, and is going to include the complete every transaction that's ever been made duplicated on the new block. So if you have Bitcoin on the old, or on the old chain, on the old chain. So if you have Bitcoin, you're going to have an equal amount of Bitcoin Cash, which is a new coin on a different blockchain that's identical up to the point of tomorrow night. And then it's going to start with its own transactions. Now, I would advise, here's the thing, like, I wouldn't do any Bitcoin transactions until a few days after this happens. If your Bitcoin is currently on an exchange and you don't have control of the keys, that could be kind of scary because you don't control it. You should have taken it out and had it locally on your own device, had the keys locally on your own device before that. Hopefully, if it's on an exchange, you might not be able to get it out before then. You might just have to trust that they'll take care of it if they say they will. Some exchanges are not touching Bitcoin Cash. They're not going to have anything to do with it. Other ones are. And what else do we need to know about it? So the block size on it is going to be up to 8 blocks. So it's going to be very much solving the problem of the full blocks that Bitcoin's been having that have been delaying transactions. See, the reason that some of the big miners who have an agenda with the old Bitcoin have been resisting this change that's a simple fix that would make transactions suddenly work is that they want to change Bitcoin into something it was never intended to be. It was always intended to be cash, like for small transactions to big transactions, any size transactions. They wanted to intentionally make it, what I call the bad side of it, the people that are kind of in control of it now, have wanted to make it so it's only used for big transactions, like only if you're wiring $20,000 to somebody. And they've tried to make it so, sending any amount of money is going to cost you $5, $10, $20, $100. That's the goal,
which
is ridiculous. So they've broken Bitcoin. Roger Ver has been screaming into any microphone that'll have him for years saying, no, we have to fix this now. And people have been ignoring him. And people that don't even have any Bitcoin, like, have a stake in this. And I really think that people who have a lot of Bitcoin probably get more of a vote in this. Although it's a decentralized software. So really, the vote is who adopts what's used, which, like I said, is in the hands of, it's in the hands of like 8 people, like 3 people that can confirm and accept, editions of software code. Anybody can add to the code, but there's like three people on the Bitcoin Core team, which is what I'm calling the bad team, the people in control of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Core team. And people are going to get mad at me for saying this. People are like, no, you're going to devalue Bitcoin. Like, one worry is like people will get confused and it'll devalue existing Bitcoin. But you know what? People haven't pushed the people who have kind of monopolized it hard enough to make it right. And the people from the Bitcoin Core team, like people on that side, not necessarily the core team, but people around them, have done really dirty tricks. Like on the Bitcoin, the R Bitcoin forum on Reddit, like those people have for years, like censored and deleted comments from people from the other side. Like, it's really been a dirty pool. So Roger finally said, you know, he's been threatening to fork for years. People said, oh, if you don't like it, why don't you go make your altcoin? He got involved with Zcash, which was another coin. All new altcoins solve this problem. No new altcoins. Like, you know, Monero, none of the Dash, none of the other new altcoins have this problem of transactions taking a long time and costing a lot of money. They're all way quicker even than Bitcoin. So Roger just said, I'm going to make Bitcoin, but make it work and have it a separate chain. Now, I would not, what I'm going to do with the little bit of Bitcoin I have is like 3 or 4 days after the dust settles, when it looks like it's okay to do it, I'm going to take the legacy Bitcoin I have, send it to myself in a transaction, so it's on a different address, then take the original address, import it into a wallet on the new chain, and then make that into Bitcoin Cash. Because there is the double spend problem. There's a theoretical problem that Bitcoin Cash supposedly addresses that I don't trust completely, that some miner couldn't figure out a way with a lot of hash power to reverse, is that if you had a lot of Bitcoin and you just tried to use the same keys on both chains, that maybe they could take your key from the other chain and lose it and take it from you on the first chain. But I think you can avoid that. They say you can avoid that if you send it to yourself. It's weird. And I'll have what Roger Ver said to me today when we get back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I'm still not going to be on the rest of the week. It's just my jumping on period here. We were talking during the break about alien technology and about how maybe there's a theory that computers are alien technology because people didn't really have computers and they didn't really take off until about the time that aliens supposedly crash landed at Roswell, New Mexico in the 40s. You guys think that's true? Think that's what happened?
There could be something to it.
They had to come show the government how to do it, and then the government messed around with it for about 3 decades until, you know, some stoners in their garage in Santa Clara got a hold of it and did it right. And small and cheap.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of alien technology, so the source of this new alien technology may or may not allegedly be Roger Ver, not a guarantee, and some other guy, and some programmers. So I wrote Roger Ver today, and I said, I love what you're doing with, first of all, the thing's called BCC, which is kind of weird because the ticker for it hasn't really been established yet, but BCC, you know, for Bitcoin Cash, like Bitcoin is BTC, Bitcoin is BIP, you know, people are calling this BCC, which is kind of weird because there's already another coin called BCC, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Connect or some coin connect that's got like a big market share, you know, like 13 million or something,
okay.
Fairly big, which is kind of weird because I've gone through the experience of having, a coin that another coin comes out with the same ticker, because Bitcoin, the coin I was involved in making, if you look at the chart for it, it's like, you know, pretty low, like 0 to 10 cents for the past year that it's been around. And then there's like one little spike where it goes up to like $1 or something or 50 cents. And that's the moment where somebody came out with something called BitPark coin, which was a token on Ethereum that, that like the computers at the things that calculate it added their market share with our market share together, or our market cap together, and our price together. So, yeah, that's what it was. So it can cause problems, but, I think they're going to work that out by tomorrow night. All the exchanges, a lot of exchanges are taking this, a lot more than take the other one. So, and this one mining company is going to put a lot of mining power behind it. So, but it's going to be like one half of 1% of the total mining power of Bitcoin. So One thing about this is that people who have Bitcoin mining equipment that is no longer profitable to mine Bitcoin on may be able to profitably mine Bitcoin Cash with the same, you know, because there won't be as much difficulty. They may be able to use that equipment to mine profitably for a while. And people were selling like futures for this for like $300 per coin 2 days ago. Hmm. So, you know, somebody's betting it has value. You know, people are still like paying $300 now to get one Tuesday kind of thing. I'll gladly pay you $300 now for a for a burger coin Tuesday. So, Roger Ver, I wrote to him today because Roger Ver was part of the, a small but important part of the alien technology production of FiendPhone, what we're talking over now. He contributed monetarily to the production and creation of FiendPhone had our fund drive to it. So I know him. And I wrote to him and I said, Roger, love what you're doing with Bitcoin Cash. May I suggest using the BIPCOT no government license, BIPCOT.org link. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments or government agents. There are no government guns for violators. Only shame could be introduced in the next update. Keep up the good work. Michael W. Dean. Roger wrote back within a few hours, hey, Michael, I didn't even know such a license existed! I'll definitely keep it in mind for the future! Roger Ver. So, I'm pretty psyched about that possibility. That'd be neat.
Nice. Dig it.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, it's a brave new world. And, you know what this whole thing reminds me of? There's a thing in AA of all you need to start a new AA meeting is a resentment in a coffee pot. And it's really true because I started an AA meeting, an NA meeting called Lust for Life in San Francisco that lasted 10 years. It was like the hipster musician meeting.
Wow.
And it lasted like, you know, after I moved out of LA. It was every week, and people liked it, and people got recovery through it who felt too out of place at the old folk meetings. And, you know, that's pretty much all we had was a resentment in a coffee shop and a coffee pot. So all you need to start a new Bitcoin is resentment in a programmer and a lot of mining power.
Worms.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Meow, meow.
to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back. We're the Freedom Fiends. I'm Shane, and I'm here with John.
Hello, everybody.
And we welcome in the second hour Belfouche and Sundance, who carry us in the second hour. And if you like what you hear, write or call your local radio station and ask them to pick up the first hour.
Oh, all right. Welcome, new listeners.
So anyway, I have an article here. We're going to switch gears. And it seems like we're living ever more in a police state these days, as we hear about all these shootings. And then the police, well, there might be another case where the cops, you know, were tried and they got off with nothing more than a paid vacation.
Seems to be every day now.
It seems to be almost every day now. I don't pay, focus on it. I try not to pay too much attention to it. But I do come across it quite often these days, more often than we should.
I don't know if it's happening
more often.
Being a writer for Free Thought, we cover a lot of police issues, so I got no choice.
The Free Thought Project. I love that, that place. So anyway, we have an article here from the Washington Post, of all places. And the headline is, Trump appears to advocate rough police treatment of suspects. This is by... I think originally by Jill Colvin of the Associated Press from AP, out of Brentwood, New York. Talking tough on illegal immigration and violent crime, President Donald Trump appeared Friday to advocate rougher treatment of people in police custody, speaking dismissively of arresting officers who protect the heads of handcuffed suspects while putting them in patrol cars. Don't be too nice, said Trump. He visited Suffolk County, New York, to highlight the administration efforts to crack down on illegal immigration and violent crime, and in particular, the street gang known as MS-13, which has terrorized communities on Long Island and in other parts of the country. The president urged Congress to find money to pay for 10,000 immigration and customs enforcement officers so that we can eliminate MS-13. Trump said the administration is removing these gang members from the United States, but we'd like to get them out a lot faster. And when you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in rough, I said. Please don't be too nice. Trump then spoke dismissively of the practice by which arresting officers shield the heads of handcuffed suspects as they are placed in police cars. I said, you could take the hand away, okay? He said. The audience included federal and law enforcement personnel from New York's New Jersey area, some of whom applauded Trump's remarks. The president offered no details on when and where he would have made those comments. Trump talks regularly about cracking down on MS-13 or Mara Salvatrucha. The gang, I probably butchered that. The gang is believed to have originated in the immigrant colony communities of Los Angeles and in the 1980s and then entrenched itself in Central America when its leaders were deported. It is known for violent tactics that include torturing victims and hacking them with machetes.
Wow.
Authorities estimate the group has tens of thousands of members across Central America and in many U.S. states. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, has instructed the Justice Department's law enforcement agencies and federal prosecutors to prioritize the prosecution of MS-13 members as directed by an executive order Trump signed in February. Since the beginning of 2017, the Department of Homeland Security's investigative unit has arrested 3,311 gang members nationwide during targeted operations, said Tom Homan, acting director of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The agency could not provide similar numbers for 2016. Trump's visit to his home state of New York came as Sessions was in El Salvador to increase international cooperation against the gang, but the president did not mention Sessions in his remarks. Trump's comments about police treatment of people in their custody resurrected memories of Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old Baltimore man who was shackled but alive when he was put in a Baltimore police van in April 2015. Gray left the vehicle with severe neck injuries, and his subsequent death spawned rioting. Six officers were charged initially, but prosecutors in July 2016 dropped all remaining charges after acquittals and a hung jury.
Gray's family agreed in September 2015 to a $6.4 million settlement with Baltimore. So, yeah, it looks like Trump is just, I don't know, meeting even more of our worst fears and expectations. What did you say?
Yeah, he's just blatantly going out there and saying basically what a lot of the past presidents have been enforcing, I believe. But he's just coming out here plainly and saying it, you know, for the whole world to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've kind of always suspected Trump of being this police state type, you know, fascist dictator type of ruler. But he seems to, you know, have outed himself as far as this goes, you know. And he does say, you know, the common practice of, you know, once you have someone in custody, you've neutralized the threat. You know, now you've got to be professional with them. At least you would think so. In a free market, security personnel would be professional with their clients, if you will. But anyway, so this practice of putting the hand over their head as they place them into the vehicle, it keeps them from getting injured. You know, I suppose that it has a good, it's a good practice because it helps keep them from being liable for any further damages. Let's say there was no police brutality, you know, and a head bump could be, you know, another, you could get sued over something like that. So I could see why that practice is in place. But now Trump is just coming out and saying, well, you could take the hand away. And it's almost implying that, you know, not only could they take the hand away, but, you know, they could bump the guy's head on the car while putting him inside and, you know, Trump's completely okay with that, which seems to encourage police brutality, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that the overall strategy that he has here is inherently flawed because you can't just go and clean up the streets with violence or police. That's not going to happen. You arrest, you know, five people from MS-13. And you keep the same market conditions and same societal conditions that exist now, there's going to be 10 more back on the street tomorrow. It doesn't matter how rough you are with them. It doesn't matter how many you deport. You know, people are going, people are going to be violent and commit crimes if they are in certain environments and if certain conditions exist, namely the condition of the drug war, which creates these gangs and incentives right. in the black market for all this violence to exist. So when people like Trump try to smash this kind of stuff down with an iron fist, you know, there's all these unintended consequences that happen. And it's like whack-a-mole, you know? I mean, you hit one and another one pops up because you can't target the humans. You need to target the conditions. Now, that's not right. to say that people who do bad things shouldn't have consequences. Of course they should. But just, you know, throwing people in jail or deporting people is not a legitimate solution for societal problems.
Right. These people are many, many times just a product of their environment. And, you know, if you remove five of them, it's the whack-a-mole, like you said, the push-down pop-up theory. There's going to be more of the pop-ups to take their place. And
it sounds like in this case, they tried to export them and get rid of the problem, and it made it worse. Because they went down and like unionized, basically. You know what? That word we can't pronounce. What MS stands for? MS-13. Mm-hmm. It means marching ants.
Really?
That's a scary name for a gang. Yeah, I have an MS-13 story. When I was living in LA, right before I left LA, probably 2 or 3 weeks before I moved out of LA, you know, I lived in a neighborhood that was kind of nice, but kind of on the cusp of neighborhoods that weren't nice. It was basically where Silver Lake and Echo Park met on a block from Sunset on Coronado, North Coronado Street, if anyone wants to look that up. And one night, I was sitting there with my girlfriend at the time, and, well, who's now my wife, but, and heard gunshot from our window, like really close, like, you know, within 100 feet probably, and someone yell and, you know, kind of knew the direction it was coming from, but you know, didn't leave the house, were smart enough to stay in, you know. Like, some people hear gunshot and, like, pop their heads up, you know. What is it? I've heard, like, black comedians say, yeah, that's what white people do when they hear gunshot. Black people get in the tub. But, exactly. You know, but so a couple days later, I was, like, out talking to these neighbors who were two doors down from me. It was this, like, couple gay couples that owned this house. And, you know, like, oh, we'll move to this edgy neighborhood and make it nice. And they'd put a lot of money into this house, really fixed it up. It'd been kind of a dump, and they'd, you know, renovated it, and it looked great. And I was talking to one of them, and I was like, did you hear a commotion the other night? And they're like, no, what are you talking about? I don't know nothing. And he's really nervous, you know? And finally, I was like, what happened, man? He's like, well, don't tell anyone this, but someone broke into our house, and these people are long gone, so I'm not risking their lives or anyway saying this. They moved out. But he said, somebody broke in our house, and we shot him. You know, because, like, in L.A., like, you could barely even own guns. Like, you know, like, we shot him. I think we shot him in the leg, and he got out. And, like, a day later, there was a huge spray-painted MS-13 side of that house, and the guys just, like, sold it dirt cheap and moved.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's scary.
That is really scary, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gangs are not to be messed with, and they are definitely a creation of the drug war, without a doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
You know where they don't have them, really?
Where?
Wyoming. Casper, Wyoming. Yeah. I mean, they have, like, there's a couple, like, white motorcycle gangs here that really, really keep to themselves that are not people you've heard of. And then there's, like, you know, a Native American gang a few, you know, counties over that kind of keep to themselves. And, yeah, it's the only place I've ever lived that doesn't have, I mean, even, like, small town America now has gangs. But Wyoming really doesn't much because, first of all, anybody, like, if you're not white, you kind of stand out in Wyoming, especially if you have, like, facial tattoos. Like, there was actually somebody who was from some L.A. gang who robbed a liquor store here a couple years ago, and they were apprehended in, like, 15 minutes because people were like, oh, where'd the guy with the facial tattoos run, oh. You know?
That's hilarious.
And everyone here is armed, you know, so, and they,
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
All right. We're back. It's the Freedom Fiends. I'm Shane here with John. Before the break,
indeed,
we were talking about Trump and his police state tactics. And about how he's actually encouraging police brutality in a way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And just giving a green light, really, for it.
Right. And he's trying to take out a certain gang. But even if he were successful in doing so, according to the push-down pop-up theory, another one would just pop up to take its place.
I wonder how much of that is just justification, too. Like, I wonder how much these gangs are just a boogeyman that he uses to prop up the, you know, Caesar's guards that, you know, keep us all in line.
I'm sure almost anything they go after is just an excuse. If they catch one enemy or get rid of one gang, then, you know, they'll say another one pops up. But how do we know that's not just some sort of black op, you know?
Because a lot of that goes on.
We do have a similar situation to that going on in the Middle East, where the boogeyman we're chasing is probably some sort of black op.
And if not, it's something that's kind of like instigated, at least, by the West. If not directly planted, instigated, at least.
Right. It's at least indirect, if not direct. But yeah,
yeah, because we know they're funding them and giving them weapons and all sorts of stuff. This is actually proven, and even Trump said that constantly during the campaign. And yeah. I believe recently this week he did cut off funding to rebel groups, I think. But, you know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? That's just on the books. God knows what's going on with the Black Ops situation.
Right, exactly. But with this gang situation, he's trying to, you know, get rid of one gang, and another one's just going to pop up and take its place. So it's going to be, you know, just as ongoing as the war on terror has been. And that's probably what their intent is to keep this going as long as possible. And another unintended, I guess, consequence of this, you know, this police state fascism that we're seeing is the backlash to it. He's just giving more ammo to groups like Black Lives Matter to become even more radicalized. And so that's why, you know, we're seeing this polarity that's already developed become worse and worse as each side becomes more extreme and more polar in opposition to the other side. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that goes straight back to Frederick Hegel, you know, and the synthesis and all that that he proposed over 100 years ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is just going to be they're following a program that helps, you know, increase government control and decrease, you know, individual liberty. And that's the kind of thing that leads to a police state over time. And I really, I'm not surprised, but it just does seem like it's almost surreal at this point. It's like I'm living in a movie. It kind of reminds me of Idiocracy in a way. The way that Trump governs is very, very comical and very, I don't know, it just seems very fictional to me a lot of times. It's like I'm living in a movie, literally.
Yeah, and a lot of times I kind of have this, like, you know, spark of optimism about the situation. And I feel like maybe this is just a very good sign for the world. You know, the fact that Kid Rock is running for Senate and The Rock, the former wrestler and actor, is, you know, talking about running for president. The fact that we have Trump in office. I'm not saying that I want these people lording over me, but the fact that this is what the government is starting to look like is it's making it apparent and obvious for the rest of the people that have been asleep all this time how much of a joke this organization actually is. We have seen it all along, even when the good actors were in there, the people like Obama, who I would consider a good actor. Trump, he's a bad actor. He's not, you know, he's just saying exactly what he thinks. And it's really making the government look ridiculous. And I just think this whole theme of celebrity politicians and stuff, I don't think they're any less qualified than the old politicians, but they definitely don't have the same PR flair.
I agree. And I like how it's almost so obviously, like, comically, you know, directly in your face. Like, Obama was really good at hiding it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. You're special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today. Because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp.
That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Meow, meow.
Meow.
And we're back. It's the Freedom Fiends once again. I'm still Shane. He's still John. And we were talking about the police state and how Trump encourages police brutality. And that all is possible thanks in part to our taxes that we pay. And it brings to mind a Lysander Spooner quote that says, "If any man's money can be taken by a so-called government without his own personal consent, all his other rights are taken with it. For with his money, the government can and will hire soldiers to stand over him, compel him to submit to its arbitrary will, and kill him if he resists." And that's so true, especially when we're talking about taxation.
Because
you're damned if you do. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, people talk about, you know, roads and schools and healthcare and all this, but that is pennies compared to the military, the police, and just the general infrastructure that protects the ruling class that lords over us. So, the pittance that they throw down to us is really just kind of like something that they do to distract us from what the taxation is really for, which is the cops and the tanks and the bombs and the guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the jails.
When it comes to, can't forget that. And when it comes to taxation, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, because if you refuse to pay your taxes, then, you know, at some point, the IRS will come with, armed guys with guns. That may not be the first step, but that is definitely the last step. And
it might not be the last step if you refuse, because then the last step is you getting killed.
Right. Exactly. And if you do pay your taxes, then you're inevitably funding things like drone strikes and bombs and war in general.
So it's death if you do, death if you don't.
Yeah. Either way you look at it, taxation is death. Yeah,
I mean, I remember we were having a conversation off air about how I was actually a communist for a good portion of my life before I, you know, grew a brain. And a part of that process of me rejecting the just idea of taxation in general was realizing that it was taxation that was funding everything that I was against, the war, the police, the jails, all of it, the laws that were oppressing me. It actually was one of the things that helped me quit smoking, too, because they raised the taxes of the cigarettes in Maryland to the point where it went over like $5. And this was like 10 years ago. And I was like, I'm paying $4 a pack to the U.S. government, and Marlboro is only getting like a dollar, and I'm giving all this money to build these bombs and these tanks, and it's honestly one of the things that helped me kick that habit, which is pretty cool. No offense to the smokers out there. Do what you want. But that is something that helped me, and it also, just in general, realizing that the war machine and the police state was all funded through something that everybody thinks is sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. Yeah. Taxation is death. It supports war and even conscription and things like that, where, they can force us to follow these laws at force, to the end of a gun.
And back to our original point when we opened the show with agorism, that is a way that we can potentially avoid, you know, contributing to this kind of stuff. Now, if you actually are a practicing agorist, then it's probably best to kind of not talk about it. I have I in the past was an agorist. I had a job that was illegal, and I was when I wrote my first book and I decided to become an activist. I made the decision to quit that illegal job because I felt that it was only safe for me to do one or the other. Somebody told me a long time ago that, being an agorist and an activist at the same time is kind of risky and dangerous. So I just, for new listeners, new agorists, that's just a word of caution, a word of advice, you know, because I have some friends in the black market who they come to me and they confide in me and they say, man, I feel real bad that I'm not more involved in activism and I'm not out there vocal. And I'm like, look, you're doing your job to undermine the system. Keep your head down and your mouth shut and I'll do the talking for you.
Right. Yeah. It reminds me of one of Conkin's quotes that I happen to have handy that says, never forget that actual physical confrontation with the state's enforcers must await the market's generation of protection agency syndicates of sufficient strength. All else is premature. And I guess that's what he's saying is, you know, in a way, we have to be pragmatic and pick and choose our battles against the state. And so we can live to fight another day when we can probably have our dispute resolution agency organization or our private security actually fight that battle for us. Because there may become a day where the state's forces become so dwindled and so weak, and the free market alternative is, you know, strong enough to defend against it at that point. So at that point, the violence inherent in the system of the state becomes, you know, obvious, and the defense to that would be private security, you know. And so that's why I like that quote by Conkins, because, you know, we have to sometimes put those battles off for another day when we can actually win them. Because right now, at this point, it would be like bringing a knife to a gunfight, because the state does have us outmanned and outclassed. Well, in a way, outgunned. I'll put it that way. So
yeah, no doubt.
So those are the kinds of battles that we have to put off for another day.
Yeah, absolutely. And me and Derek actually covered that issue in our most recent book. You said you hadn't made it through to the end yet, but I think it might be the last chapter, we talk about tax resistance and intentional communities banding together to all resist taxes at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
we discussed about when would be the best time to do that massive tax resistance. And going along with Conkin's theories, we think that you set up the communities first, you set up the alternative defense agencies, and then, as you said, as these defense agencies grow in power and scope to the point where they can rival the state, that's where you pull the rug out, and that's where you, in mass tax resist, and then that'll bleed the state dry to the point where they would be either forced to scale back their police state and their military state.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would have to pull back their services that they bribe people with, which would in turn cause even more people to lose faith in the state. So it's a very strategic kind of chess strategy instead mm-hmm. of just going in guns blazing.
Right. And if every locality were to have something like Viper threat management or some equivalent private security forum in place, then when these tax protests were staged, then you would force the government's hand to become the aggressor and initiate the aggression against these people who now have equal or greater protection from the state. And hopefully it wouldn't come to an actual battle, and the state would realize that they're outgunned at that point and they would concede. However, I kind of doubt that they won't go down without a fight.
You know, I actually kind of have a little bit of a different perspective, because of course, I sense that you're saying that because you recognize that they are fighters and that they never give up. And I agree with you there, but I think that the reason for that behavior is because that they have always had the upper hand. But in reality, they are cowards. And if they don't have the upper hand, they will behave like cowards, in my opinion. I don't think they're behaving like cowards now because they know they have the upper hand and that there's not much that they can do to lose. But when they're in a different position, I think that they will run scared. I think that they will make compromises and that, you know, they will ultimately show that they are cowards.
That's just a theory. That's a very good point, very good theory. And for our sake, I hope you're actually right. And I should actually follow my own beliefs when it comes to this. I believe that, you know, in the teachings of Sun Tzu from The Art of War, and I'm going to have to paraphrase because I'm so bad with quotes off the top of my head, but he does speak about how those who usually initiate the force or the aggression, I know he doesn't put it in such libertarian terms, but usually the ones who resort to violence first are the ones who lose. He prefers to play defense rather than offense because it's so much harder to have a victory when you're the offense. It's much easier to fight a defensive battle, according to The Art of War. So,
true. And I mean, along with everything in that book, I mean, it's one of the greatest books of all time. And, you know, for those of you out there who have not read it, you'll probably do yourself a favor and, you know, check it out because it fills you with just ultimate life lessons that, you know, a lot of people don't pick up.
Right. Yeah. And so hopefully, according to the rules of The Art of War, government would see that they're fighting a losing battle and not fight it at all, you know. So, yeah. Basically, I think Sun Tzu said something about the first one to violence is usually the loser or something like that.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think even I myself have to remind myself a lot of times is that There is definitely a percentage of these people who are evil overlords and stuff, and, you know, but the vast majority of these people are just, you know, hoodwinked idiots who are oppressing us because they've been convinced of something. And the situations that we're describing could possibly reverse that.
Right. I do tend to think that these people are not so much evil as misguided. And with that, we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Meow, 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 tour that's coming up here.
Free it's based plugs. On the,
yeah.
Yep. It's based on
free hair plugs.
It's based on the book by John Vibes and Derek Bros, Manifesto of the Free Humans, which is also influenced by Samuel Konkin's New Libertarian Manifesto. So
yeah,
anyway,
Derek is doing the trip solo because I'm dealing with the cancer stuff. We originally planned to do it together, but
why don't you Skype in?
That would be a good idea, actually.
I've done that, man. I've totally done that. Like, to, like, you know, where people want me to fly out and do something and I've double booked or health problems or whatever. I just set up a webcam, use my good mic, and take questions from the audience. I've had them do it, like, with, you know, put it up on a big 6-foot monitor or, you know, whatever big computer monitor they can have there, and you appear anyway.
That's not a bad idea. We did that with a couple of speakers for the Free Your Mind conference this year.
And yeah, we did that with Lynn Ulbricht at the Midwest Peace and Liberty
Fest. Man. And I did it, Nima Vedati and I did it at the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party event like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yep.
I could have probably been at that.
Yeah, you might have been. Ben Stone was there. Luckin' Rose was there.
So,
yeah. So anyway,
you're actually going to be involved with one of the events, aren't you, Shane? Which I'm disappointed I don't get to meet you, but
yeah, the Conscious Resistance Network's Decentralize Your Life tour is coming to Cincinnati, where I live, on August 14th, and I'm going to be helping out with that. It starts out with an OP Helping Hands in Pyatt Park, where they're going to be feeding the homeless. They're going to be, you know, making sandwiches and all kinds of stuff like that to hand out to the homeless. And then they're going to head over to French Park, I believe, for the rest of the activities that day.
Yeah, we're doing, just to let everybody know, along with the tour, there is an action day on each stop of the tour where some type of a charity or activism work is done in the city throughout the day.
Yeah. Yeah, so it says they're doing open OP Helping Hands first at Pyatt Park like they always do, and then after Helping Hands, they're heading to French Park for the rest of the day. Justin King of the Fifth Column has offered a self-defense class. Then as part of the Conscious Resistance Network's Decentralize Your Life tour, Derek Brose will be speaking on his new book and more, along with a few of their members from the Houston Free Thinkers. They will also have Justin King come back to speak at this event as well. A few Awakened Cincinnatians, Carly Malumbi, from Homesteading on the Hill, will be speaking on urban homesteading.
And then, I didn't realize Justin was going to be there, too. That's awesome. He does a lot of great work.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to meeting all of them. Jack Sparrow is going to be there. I guess they're going to have live music, and they're going to give speeches, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes, at the top of the show notes for that. True.
And we might even be able to have a Skype appearance by John Vibes.
Yeah,
if his internet
definitely
holds out.
Yeah, now I don't want to waste
send donations. Internet. Send donations for internets. Yeah, because video takes a lot more internets than audio. But actually what you could do is, I think you can turn down the, I don't know if you can do this separately on Skype, but if you can, I would put the audio on good quality and put the video on okay quality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, even if you didn't have limited bandwidth, I think that it would probably make the audio better, which is more important. Really, what they could really do, too, is just put up a picture of you and just have audio only, and then you'd be guaranteed it would sound good.
Oh, yeah. If it's a bandwidth thing, we could do audio only.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's definitely an issue out here in the
world. I was figuring, unless you're a hot chick, you know, like those Google those Google Hangout podcasts that are like five neckbeards vaping.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that'll sound good.
Yeah, well, we had Jordan Maxwell Skype in for the Free Your Mind conference, and he's not the most attractive character. He's a great speaker, but, you know, he's old
cool
stuff.
Yeah. Well, those guys, you want to, like, put the camera further back, but then they don't have a separate mic, so the audio sounds bad.
Yeah, well, there could be a niche market for that sort of thing.
I do audio only, even though I'm still incredibly handsome, but, you know, it's all about the audio.
Worms.
Well, that's because bandwidth is a hate crime.
It is.
That too.
Good show, guys. Hey, you guys can first chair now. I like it. Opens up a lot of possibilities. Worms.
It's good to have you back, Michael.
It's good to be back. I'm not going to be back the rest of the week. I'm going to take it off and get better, but worms.
Get better, Michael.